ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
हरे कृष्ण। Yesterday, we discussed the first three verses in Kunti's prayers. We ended with Kunti Maharani's very humble prayer. She takes a very low position by saying, Katham pashyema hi striyaha. How can we women know you? You are meant to be known by those who are very elevated, paramhansas, amalatmanam, whose hearts are free from all material dirt, great yogis, jnanis, learned philosophers. They are supposed to be qualified to understand you. But we are simply ordinary ladies living in home, at home. So what is the possibility that we can understand you? We discussed that it is precisely this mood of humility and feeling oneself unqualified that really makes us qualified. One who thinks that he or she is qualified is not actually qualified. This is the paradox of Krishna consciousness. All the great devotees of the Lord, they always think themselves to be insignificant. We discussed yesterday and day before also how Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Narottam Das Thakur and acharyas like this, they always write in their poems that they are the most fallen of all creatures. So this is the mood in Vaishnava life of humility. When the devotee feels he doesn't know Krishna, he is not qualified to know Krishna, but still he serves. In India we see this tendency in people that if you go and talk to them about Bhagavad Gita, they say, yeah, I know Bhagavad Gita. I know Krishna. From beginning, they say, yes, yes, I know. I have been hearing from childhood. It's okay. And especially if a Western devotee tries to preach, then sometimes they become, their nationalistic ego comes up and they feel, I am an Indian, I am supposed to know this, he knows more than me. He knows in his heart of hearts that this Westerner knows more about Gita than me. He has surrendered his life to Lord Krishna and I am still involved in my worldly pursuits. But still, they often say, I know everything. After the Brahma Vimohan Leela in Vrindavan, Brahmaji comes to realize, or rather is reminded once again, of the glory of Sri Krishna. And he offers many beautiful prayers worth studying. Each of these verses is a jewel, just like in Queen Kunti's prayers. And in one of those verses, he tells Krishna, Janant eva janantu kim bahuktya na me prabho manaso vapusho vachaha vaibhavam tava gocharaha. He says, my dear Krishna, there are many people in this world who say, I know Krishna. As far as I am concerned, let them say what they want to say. Kim bahukte name prabho? What more is said? Why should I say? Janantu, let them think like that. But as far as I am concerned, I don't think like that. I understand that with my mind, with my words, and with my body, I cannot even approach the beginning of your glories. Vaibhavam tava gocharaha. Gochara means to approach. Vaibhava means the glories. In other words, Brahmaji, the most exalted personality of this universe, the creator of this universe, the inaugurator of the one of the important Vaishnava sampradayas, he is saying that Krishna is so great that even with his body, mind, words, he can't even imagine approaching the understanding of Krishna's greatness and his glories. Infinitely glorious is Krishna. So this is how Brahmaji is thinking. So how much more an ordinary person, a human being of Kali Yuga should be thinking? It is significant that Kunti Maharani was a lady. She never had formal education. She never went to school, college. In those days, ladies were not sent to school and college. Only the boys were sent to the Gurukul. They stayed in the Gurukul from the age of 5 to the age of 25. And then some of them entered Grihastha Ashram. Some of them continued as brahmacharis, eventually to take sannyas. They were called Naishtika brahmacharis. Those who entered Grihastha Ashram lived in Grihastha Ashram from 25 to 50 years of age. At 50 they would take Vanaprastha, and then eventually at 75 they would take sannyas, and then 200 years they would live. That was the general situation. So Kunti Maharani never underwent formal education. The girls in those days were taught only by the mother and the parents in the house. So the culture was so strong that the girls were brought up with such a strong philosophical understanding. So we can see that the mood, the understanding of Krishna consciousness, of the path of spiritual life, the deep truths that she is expressing are not to be found even in the educated ladies to be found in the universities today. They may have been highly educated with so many degrees, but you cannot compare any of them with Kunti Maharani. What to speak of Kunti Maharani? She was at least from a royal family, from a city, distinguished family. What about the gopis? Gopis didn't even live in the city. They were just ordinary village ladies. What did they know about philosophy and all these things? But still, the conclusions that they expressed in their prayers are so elevated that are beyond the understanding. What to speak of the ordinary girls educated in the universities, but even the greatest scholars. So we should see, the real scholarship is not a matter of knowing some abstract philosophical arguments or knowing this vad and that vad, but it is a matter of knowing and realizing the conclusions of the Shastra. Therefore, one who understands Krishna, he knows everything. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains, Yomam evam asammodho janati eva purushottama. Sa sarvavit bhajati mam sarvabhavena bharata. Lord Krishna says, one who knows me, yo mam eva asammodho janati purushottama. One who knows me as purushottam, as a supreme person, asammodhaha, without any doubt. Sa sarvavit, he is considered to be the knower of everything. And in that position, sarvabhavena bhajati, he worships me with his full bhav, his full heart and soul. So Kunti Maharani has reached that perfection. So even in our movement, we may see there are some devotees who may be very scholarly. There are some devotees who may not be scholarly. There are some who may be in the forefront, in the front line of preaching and various other activities and responsibilities. And some may be in the background, simple. Nobody may be knowing much about them. They are quietly coming, going, doing their service, chanting their rounds. Very sincere, very humble. They exhibit many nice Vaishnava qualities. So generally the tendency of this world is that we go by the externals. If somebody is doing something very dramatic, something very wonderful and grand, then we glorify such a person and we appreciate such a person. And similarly in Krishna consciousness, the tendency may be that we glorify people who are doing wonderful services for Krishna. That is good. They also must be glorified because Krishna has empowered them to do these wonderful things for Him. But at the same time, we should not forget those devotees who may be apparently insignificant, apparently not so important, who may be somewhat in the background, never in the forefront. They don't quote so many shlokas, or they don't indulge in all kinds of deep philosophical discussions. But simply by their sincerity, Krishna is recognizing them. Krishna doesn't look only for learning. Krishna is looking at the heart. Man looks at the external appearance. Krishna looks at the heart. So if somebody's heart is very sincere and pure and humble like Kunti Maharani is, whether it is in a male body or a female body, that is another question. But if someone has a heart like that and is sincerely striving to serve, Krishna will recognize that. Actually, our movement is being sustained not just by those devotees who are in the forefront, but also by those simple ordinary devotees who may be housewives, who may be some simple brahmachari cutting vegetables and doing nothing else, and who may be other devotees involved in other activities. It is being sustained because of the sincerity, the sheer sincerity of devotees like this. So Krishna is pushing along this movement, Mahaprabhu's movement. So there is a great lesson for us to be learned in this verse and in general in Kunti Maharani's prayers. So then let us see now how Kunti Maharani continues her prayers. And the next 2-3 verses are also very famous. They are very popular verses. I'm sure all of you have heard these and chanted these before. So let us chant text 21 together.
Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya cha. Nanda Gopa Kumaraya Govindaya Namo Namaha. Nanda Gopa Kumaraya Govindaya Namo.
Let me therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto the Lord, who has become the son of Vasudev, the pleasure of Devaki, the boy of Nanda and the other cowherd men of Vrindavan, and the enlivener of the cows and senses. Kunti Maharani is beginning with Krishnaya. Of all the incarnations and forms of the Supreme Lord, she prefers Krishna. Because Krishna is the sweetest of all forms of the Lord, the most attractive, more merciful, more attractive than even Lord Ramachandra. Although Krishna was born in a Kshatriya family as a son of Vasudev and Devaki, nevertheless, he was transported to Gokul, where he lived in the humble, small, simple village with the gopis and gopas and performed many, many charming pastimes in the village surroundings, in the forest. So his pastimes there are full of sweetness called Madhurya. Whereas in the royal order, the pastimes he performed like in Dwarka, there is sweetness, but there is more opulence, awe, reverence, Aishwarya. So Kunti Maharani prefers the sweet form of Krishna. And we will see now that Kunti Maharani is making a slight switch. What switch is she making? Earlier she has been addressing Krishna as Adipurush. Purusham tu Adyam. Ishwaram Prakritihi Param. Like that. She has been glorifying him as the Lord of the creation, as the original personality of the creation, and so on. So these are names of Krishna in Aishwarya Bhav. We are thinking of the greatness of the Lord. But now, Kunti Maharani is going to begin chanting some names of Krishna which are sweet. She is now moving into the sweetness of Krishna's names, coming away slowly from the Aishwarya. In the Harinam Chintamani, written by Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, there is a narration of Haridas Thakur's explanations to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about the holy name. A very nice book. Many, many wonderful aspects of the holy name have been dealt with here. And Haridas Thakur says that the name of God can be divided. There can be two kinds, two types of the name of God. One are called the primary names of the Lord, and the other are the secondary names of the Lord. Primary names are those that deal with the sweetness of Krishna, with his pastimes. Names like Gopi Jana Vallabha, one who is very dear to the gopis, or like, for example, Gopal, when he herds the cows. These are names connected to his very intimate, sweet pastimes and activities in the world. And there are other names, secondary names, which are in a mood of awe and reverence, which deal with the Lord with respect to his role as the creator, Jagadish, Parameshwar, like that. So, there is sweetness in these primary names. There is not so much sweetness in the secondary names. So here, Kunti Maharani is beginning to chant these primary names of Krishna. And she begins with Krishna himself, the name Krishna. Krishir bhu vachakah shabda nasch nirviti vachakah tayor aikyam param brahma Krishna iti abhidhiyate. It is described, the word Krishna consists of two syllables, Krish and Na. The word Krish indicates bhu, or the spiritual pleasure, the attractiveness of the Lord. And Na, the word Na, indicates the spiritual ananda. So when the two, Krish and Na, are combined, one gets Krishna, which indicates the absolute truth. Param Brahma Abhidhiyate. So Krishna means all attractive. One who has all the six opulences. You know this definition of Bhagavan, right? One who possesses what six bhaga, all the opulences. So Krishna is most attractive because he has all these opulences in perfection, in completeness. And therefore Krishna is a very intimate name of God. It is a very personal name of God. It includes all the sweetness that is there in the other names also. It is eternally his name. There are many who come with the argument that Krishna got his name only when Garga Rishi performed the Namkaran, the name-giving ceremony. As you know from Krishna book, that it was done in secrecy because Nanda Maharaj was afraid that Kamsa would somehow come to know, because Vasudeva had already warned him. So this was done in hiding. And then Garga Rishi made so many prophecies, you all know these stories. And then he gave the name Krishna. So there are many people who believe that Krishna was a name that he got only when Garga Rishi performed the ceremony. So how do you say that Krishna is God always? Krishna is eternally His name. It is just the pastime that Garga Rishi has named Him like this according to His original name. Actually, God has no name. Is it surprising to hear? How do we have a name? Because somebody gave it to us, right? Our parents, our elderly relatives, they must have thought of a name for us. So when there is someone who is older than you, then he or she gives you a name. Who is older than Krishna? Who comes before Krishna? Who is Krishna's father, Krishna's mother, really speaking, to give him a name? So in a sense, he has no name. But he is given names by his devotees. According to his various leelas, his gunas, his forms. So therefore, we find Naam Guna Roopa Leela. These things are described nicely by Haridas Thakur in Harinam Chintamani. There are four aspects of the Lord that are very important for us to understand. Naam, that is His holy name. Guna, that is His transcendental qualities. Roop, that is His beautiful transcendental form. And Leela, that means His attractive pastimes. So the names of Krishna or God are given according to the Guna, Roop and Leela. Can you think of some names that God has based on His qualities, His Guna? Can you think of some names? Huh? No. That a quality, like Kripanidhi for example. Kripanidhi, He is an ocean of mercy. Dina Bandhu, He is a friend of the Dina, the fallen, the most humble. No, the qualities that He has, not the Roop. Bhaktavatsala. He is very affectionate to His devotees. Rishikesh, yes, He is the master of the senses. Now these are related to the Rupa. So anyway, these are a few examples of the names of God in relation to His qualities. Then there is Rupa. Rupa means form. Somebody mentioned Shyam Sundar. So Shyam Sundar refers to the form of Krishna. He is very beautiful, Sundar, and His complexion is that of a monsoon cloud. As Jayadev Goswami says, Abhinava Jaladara Sundara Hai. So He is Sundar, He is beautiful, but His complexion is like that of an Abhinava Jaladara. Jaladhara means that which holds water, the clouds. Abhinava means just newly fresh monsoon cloud. So the word Shyama Sundar refers to Krishna's form, having this complexion in all His beauty. So this is the name of Krishna according to His beauty, according to His form. So we have Guna, Roop, and then there is Leela. So can you think of some names according to His Leela? Giridhari, one who holds up the Giridhari, Govardhan mountain. Then what else? Partha Sarathi, one who became the Sarathi of Partha or Arjuna. Gopinath, yes, who is the Lord of the Gopis. Muralidhar, one who holds the flute. Like that. So there are many, many such names according to His Leelas. So in this way we see that Krishna has so many names given by His devotees to Him, depending upon His qualities, His wonderful forms and His wonderful activities. So the question was asked the other day that should we then think about the Roop, Guna and Leela, since the predominant or the Yuga Dharma for this age is chanting of the holy name? Certainly we should, but the primary process is to chant the name by japa and kirtan. When we chant the holy name, however, with great attention, with great devotion, then it is explained that the other three are automatically realized in progression. This is how Haridas Thakur explains in Harinam Chintamani, that when you chant the name, all realizations will come automatically. One time Srila Prabhupada was asked also that when we chant our japa, then should we think about Krishna's pastimes? So Prabhupada said, well, it's not wrong, it's all right. But the process is to hear. So one should try to hear, and naturally the pastimes and qualities and other things will come in due course of time, because the holy name will reveal the other aspects of the Supreme Lord. So in a sense, we don't need anything more than the holy name, because the holy name contains within itself everything. The holy name is complete. It contains Naam, Roop, Guna, Leela. Everything is there in the holy name of the Lord. So at the same time, to strengthen our faith in the chanting process, to increase our taste in the chanting of the holy name, to keep ourselves gainfully and properly engaged throughout the day in Krishna's service, to give us proper understanding of the Absolute Truth, we do discuss all these other subjects which are also very essential, like talking of the qualities of Krishna. So this Shravanam Kirtanam is the goal and also the means, sadhana and sadhya, as we were discussing with somebody yesterday in a question, that the process of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, etc. are both the sadhana and the sadhya. Sadhana means it is the instrument or the means to achieve an end. And sadhya means it is the goal, the ultimate objective. But we chant Krishna's names not because we want to achieve something, after achieving which we give up the chanting of the holy name. That is a Mayavadi approach. They use these different angas of bhakti for a purpose which is different from bhakti. They chant the holy names, they also worship the deity, they read Srimad Bhagavatam, but they do it because they want to merge into the impersonal aspect of the Lord. So that is not called bhakti, what they do. For them, sadhana and sadhya is different. But for devotees, sadhana and sadhya is the same. One time Srila Prabhupada was asked, why do you chant Hare Krishna? So he replied, to chant more Hare Krishna. Because we chant Hare Krishna so that our hearts get purified, and in that purified state of consciousness we can chant more purely the names of Krishna. And then by that process we become more purified, we can chant even more purely the names of Krishna. So this is the way, this is the process of bhakti. Then Kunti Maharani says, after Krishnaya, she says, Krishnaya Vasudevaya. Now, having introduced the Lord as Krishna, the all-attractive one, she wants to give some more information about God. Just like when we want to know the details of somebody, you have a bio data or something, you always ask, what is your father's name? What is your address? What do you do? So Kunti Maharani is giving all this information. She begins by giving father's name. So Vasudevaya, that he is the son of Vasudev. So Krishna was very kind to Devaki and Vasudev because he appeared as their son. But Yashoda Mata and Nanda Maharaj were more fortunate because they got to see the childhood pastimes of Krishna, which Devaki and Vasudev did not get the chance to see. So both got the chance to be the father and mother of Krishna. But originally in this world, Vasudev was the father. The second meaning of the word Vasudev is one who is all-pervading. So Kunti Maharani wants to emphasize that yes, as Vasudev you are all-pervading, but you are also present in front of me, physically, personally. So Krishna can be everywhere and yet at one place. We were discussing this yesterday. Antar bahiravastitam. That he is inside, he is outside, he is at one place, he is everywhere. And all these contradictions, all these dualities, opposites can be reconciled in the Absolute Truth. So this is the meaning of God, of the Absolute Truth. There is another meaning to the word Vasudev. There is one who is realized by a person who is situated on the platform of Vasudev. That means a platform of Vishuddha Sattva. You are aware of the three gunas, Sattva Guna, Rajaguna, Tamaguna. Now beyond these three modes is a spiritual platform, purified goodness, which is called Shuddha Sattva or Vishuddha Sattva. That is a spiritual platform where there is no contamination of the lower three modes, of the three material modes. So that is also called Vasudeva. So one who is on the Vasudeva platform is eligible to understand the Supreme Lord. So this is the significance of the word Vasudeva. Then Kunti Maharani addresses Krishna as Devaki Nandanaya, Devaki Nandana. So these are all very intimate names of Krishna because they deal with his very intimate relationships in this world. Actually, as we discussed, Krishna has no mother, no father. Who can be Krishna's mother and father? Pita hamasya jagato mata dhata pitamaha. Krishna says, I am the mother, the father, the grandfather of everyone. In the Gita also he says, sarva yoni shukaunteya murtaya sambhavantiya tasam brahma mahadyoni aham bija pradharpita. I am the seed-giving father of all living entities. So he is the father. Krishna Mata, Krishna Pita, Krishna Dhana Pran, Bhaktivinoda Thakur plays. Krishna is the mother, Krishna is the father of all living entities. But nevertheless, Krishna, although he is the father of everyone, he doesn't like to be the father. Do you know why? Why Krishna doesn't like to be father? To be father means you have children, first of all. Otherwise there is no meaning to father, isn't it? So as a supreme father, he has many children, countless. And unfortunately, many of those children, like any ordinary child does to the parent, so Krishna doesn't like to be the father so much because, as you know, an ordinary child, what does it do to his father or mother? Father, give me this, give me that, give me chocolate, give me ice cream, give me this, give me that. So all the living entities in this world, they are approaching the Lord. Dhanam dehi, rupam dehi, this dehi, that dehi, give me this, give me that. As Prabhupada used to say, they are treating God as an order supplier. And if God doesn't give, then they get upset with God. Why God is not fulfilling my material desires? So Krishna says, enough of this. I don't want everyone coming to me. Since time immemorial, I am fulfilling the desires of all my children, but they are never satisfied. Anyway, I have to continue doing it. It is my duty as father, and I will do it. But I also want to be son. I also want to be somebody's son, and then I will make demands of my father and my mother. Give me butter, give me curd, give me this, give me that, give me milk. So Krishna becomes the son of Mother Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj, Devaki, Vasudev. And in Vrindavan, he made demands on his mother, on his father. I want this, I want that, I want this. And then they had to fulfill. Therefore, because of this behavior, this attitude of the Supreme Lord, Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda could never believe, even if they were told, that their child was actually the Supreme Lord. Then they would think, if he is really the Lord, how is it that he is so dependent on us? This is the Vatsalya Bhav. If I don't maintain my son, harm will come to him. He may even die. So they would always chant all kinds of protective prayers, all kinds of kavachas, mantra kavachas, they would chant for his benefit. And they would think that because of some pious activities they had done in previous lives, that somehow Krishna was saved from the asuras. So this is the mood of Krishna. He likes to be the son rather than the father. Because in that position, he receives love. Krishna is a person, like all of us. And as a person, he also has feelings, he has desires, he has emotions. And like all of us, he likes to reciprocate, he likes to have an exchange of these emotions. with those whom he loves. That is what bhakti is all about. Bhakti is nothing but an exchange of pure spiritual emotions between the devotee, the bhakta, and the Supreme Lord. So it is explained that there are only three realities. There is Bhagavan, there is bhakta, and there is bhakti. Bhagavan is the Lord, bhakta is the devotee, and bhakti is the relationship between the two. It is the relationship of love. So therefore, Krishna has accepted parents out of his love. And he has chosen very qualified people. Those who are very, very pure devotees, like Devaki and Vasudev. He has chosen them. He is actually not their son. Therefore, in the Bhagavatam there is a famous prayer, right? Janati Jananivaso Devaki Janmavado. All glories to Krishna, who is Jananivasa. Jananivasa means he lives, Nivasa, among the Jana, among the ordinary human beings, as if he were also an ordinary human being. So when Krishna walked amongst the Yadus, or walked amongst the Pandavas and the residents of Hastinapur, or he walked amongst the Brajabasis, it was as if he was just one among them. There is one meaning of Jananivas. The second meaning of Jananivas is that he is a Nivas for all the Jana, for all the people. Nivas in this case means shelter. He is a refuge. He is a refuge for all living beings. Devaki Janmavado. Devaki Janmavado means that he is called, he is known as the son of Devaki. Not that he is the son of Devaki, but he is known as the son of Devaki. What is the meaning of that? That means actually he is nobody's son, but he is known as Devaki's son because he has accepted them as mother and father for his leela, for his pastimes, out of his love for them, and because of their love for him. So this is how Krishna appears as a son, and he exchanges so many loving dealings with his devotees. Devaki and Vasudev, of course, are very exalted devotees. They were Sutapa and Prishni in their previous life. And they performed austerities for a long time, for thousands of celestial years. And the Lord appeared before her, before both of them. And they begged for a son who would be just like the Lord. And the Lord said, no one can be like me. So I have to come myself as your son. And then he appeared before them as Prishni Garbha. Next life, you know the story. Sutapa and Prishni came as Aditi and Kashyap. And then Vamanadev came as their son. And then they appeared in their third birth as Vasudev and Devaki. And then Krishna personally came, Devaki Nandana. So that is the purport of Devaki Nandana. Then she says, Nanda Gopa Kumaraya. Nanda Maharaj. Now Kunti Maharani is switching to Braja, to Vrindavan, from Mathura. He is the most beloved child of not only Nanda Maharaj, but also all the other gopas, elderly gopas of Vrindavan. The gopas were extremely fortunate because they all loved Krishna as their son. In fact, the very distinguishing feature of Vrindavan was that all the gopas and gopis, elderly ones, who had children, they loved Krishna more than their own sons. Usually a parent will love his or her child more than other people's children. It is natural. It's your own child, Atmaja, born from your own self. So there is some kind of natural bond that comes. And one tends to develop a stronger attachment to one's own children. One may love other children, but ultimately one's own child is one's own child. But here we find, in Vrindavan, the Vatsalya Prema was so strong that the elder gopas and gopis loved Krishna much more than their own child. And we were discussing briefly the other day about the Brahma Vimohan Leela. That number 4 of the list of Vatsalya in the hierarchy was who? No. Number three is Rohini. The elderly gopis of Vraja, whose sons had been kidnapped by Brahma during the Brahma Vimohan Leela. And at that time we discussed that these gopis had a very strong desire to deal with Krishna just as Mother Yashoda was dealing with her, with him. And Krishna fulfilled their desire. So he became their son because he expanded himself to become exactly like their sons. So they fed him, they clothed him, decorated him, they did all kinds of things to him. So they got that chance. So they were actually the mothers and fathers of Krishna for that 1 year, directly. So this was the fortune of the gopas and gopis. In that 1 year, when Krishna became their son, they were puzzled by the fact that now they loved their son as much as Krishna. They could not understand why. Previously, their love for their own children was less than their love for Krishna. But in this 1 year, it was the same. But they could not figure out why this has happened. So anyway, they were just continued to love. They continued to love their children like that. So there are many, many devotees who glorify the great love that Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mata had for Krishna. One devotee has prayed, and this verse appears in the Srimad, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Shrutim apare smritim itare bhartam anye bhajantu bhavabhitah. He says, some people worship the Shrutis, some people worship the Smritis. There are others who worship the Mahabharat, bhajantu bhavabhitah, because they are afraid of this bhava sagar, this worldly existence. But he says, aham iham nandam vande yasya alinde param brahma. But I am not interested in worshipping Shruti, Smriti, Mahabharat and so on. I simply worship Nanda Maharaj, in whose courtyard the Supreme Lord, Param Brahma, was playing like an ordinary child. So this was the glory and the greatness of Nanda, that in his house, the Supreme Absolute Truth was playing as if he was an ordinary boy, crawling, crying, performing so many pastimes. And finally, she says, Govindaya Namo Namaha, Govinda. So Govinda is another very intimate name of Krishna, which means he is the protector of the cows and the enlivener of the senses. Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmanya Hitaya Cha Jagat Hitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namaha. So this is Brahmanical culture. When cows are protected and the Brahmanas are protected, then Vedic culture, Brahmanical culture flourishes, and in such a culture, it is very easy to realize God. In a culture where both these points are destroyed, it is a demoniac civilization. So Prabhupada very strongly wanted to establish both these principles through the ISKCON society. So he said, one of my main aims is to create Brahmanas from the Shudras in the present day society. And these Brahmanas can then teach the world the principles of Vedic civilization. And he also emphasized cow protection to a great degree. So in this way, Kunti Maharani is mentioning some of the sweet names of Krishna. And she continues with some of the sweeter descriptions of Krishna in the next verse. This is also a very sweet verse.
Namaha Pankajanabhaya Namaha Pankajamaline Namaha Pankajanetraya Namaste Pankajangraye
respectful obeisances are unto you, O Lord, whose abdomen is marked with a depression like a lotus flower, who are always decorated with garlands of lotus flowers, whose glance is as cool as a lotus, and whose feet are engraved with lotuses. So Kunti Maharani is giving further distinguishing features of Krishna, how to identify Krishna. And in all the four descriptions, she has used the example of the lotus. The lotus is very commonly used as an analogy, a metaphor by poets, especially Vaishnava poets. And in our language, in the language of the Bhagavatam, you will always find lotus face, lotus eyes, lotus hands, lotus feet, lotus lips, lotus everything. Why? Because the lotus is very beautiful. It is very pure. That is why it is called the symbol of purity. Pankaja. Panka means mud. Germ is that which takes birth. Pankaj is that which takes birth in the mud, the lotus, but it doesn't get dirty in spite of being there. Padma Patra Ivambasa. Bhagavad Gita also Krishna explains that one should live in this world like a lotus flower, like a lotus leaf. Is not affected, doesn't get wet by the water. Have you examined a lotus leaf floating in the lake? When you see the water coming on top, you will see that there is some kind of action on the leaf because of the waxy surface. The water immediately comes to the form of a drop and slides off. Something like mercury. You know, you have seen mercury? Mercury becomes like a droplet. So like that, water on a lotus leaf becomes like that. And it slides off. So even though the lotus leaf is there in the water, it doesn't get wet. The lotus flower is born in the mud, pankaja, but it remains pure. So it is a symbol of purity. The lotus is compared to Krishna's lotus, his lips, his eyes, his ears, everything connected to Krishna, even his abdomen, is all compared to the lotus. There are so many different words in Sanskrit for lotus. And because Sanskrit basically is a very poetic language. And by different combinations and expressions, the poets make some things very attractive. Some of the words for lotus are like Kamal, Pankaj, Nalina, Saroj, like that. Utpala, different kinds of lotuses. And then you use it in combination with other things. And then you have so many combinations like that. So, very poetically in the Bhagavatam and also by the other Vaishnava poets, we see the lotus used very expertly as a metaphor or as an analogy. We see here Kunti Maharani beginning this description from the abdomen, which seems rather unusual, isn't it? We were discussing yesterday that when we have darshan of the Lord, one should start from the lotus feet, and then gradually go upwards. Right? But Kunti Maharani is beginning by saying, Namaha Pankaja Nabhaya. Nabha means the navel. Why is that? Prabhupada explains that if she began with the lotus feet, then Krishna may have been embarrassed because he was the nephew after all. And Kunti Maharani was his superior. She was his aunt. So Kunti did not want to embarrass him too much. So she started the glorification from the abdomen. In the end, she came to the lotus feet. But she began by the abdomen. So she says, Namaha Pankaja Nabhaya. That his abdomen is just like a lotus flower. Very beautiful, shaped. Not only that, in Krishna's expansion, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, from his navel, actually a lotus flower also comes out. And in that lotus flower, in the stem of that, the stalk of that flower, all the 14 worlds are situated. And on the top of that, on the whorl of the flower, is situated Brahma, the creator of this universe. Therefore, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is also called Padmanabha, one from whose navel a Padma or a lotus comes. Then Kunti Maharani says, Namah Pankaja Maline. One who has a garland of lotus flowers. Krishna likes to wear garlands. Krishna likes flowers, basically. And even in childhood, even during his Pauganda Leela, when he used to take the cows out to graze, they would always be plucking different flowers. And they would be decorating themselves, Krishna and the cowherd boys, with various flowers and natural minerals that were found there. And they would also be decorated with the Vaijayanti Mala. Barha Pidam Natavara Vapuhu Karnayoh Karnikaram. Karnayoh Karnikaram. They would wear the Karnikara flowers in the ears. And then they would have the Vaijayanti Mala. The Vaijayanti Mala is a very typical garland that is connected with Krishna. It is composed of 5 different colored flowers. It extends down to the knees. If you see the pictures of Krishna wearing garlands, you will see it always extends down to the knees and looks very beautiful. By the way, here is a nice picture. You can see this in the first canto. Kunti Maharani is offering her prayers. Krishna is seated on the chariot, about to leave, and she is there beseeching him not to go. And that is the time, in this mood of impending separation, that these prayers were chanted. So you can notice the garland of lotuses that Krishna is wearing. It's quite a long garland, and it extends down to his knees. So Krishna is also called Vanamali, because he wears a garland of forest flowers. Kalita Lalita Vanamala. Jayadev Goswami also has explained in the famous Srita Kamala Bhajan, Kalita Lalita Vanamala. He holds a Vanamala around his neck, and therefore he is Lalit. Lalit means one who is very graceful, one who is very attractive. So Krishna looks very graceful and dashing with all his different clothes and his clothes. So Kalita Lalita Vanamala. And by wearing all these wonderful garlands and flowers, Krishna decorates himself. Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam. So Krishna is more pleased by flowers, by tulsi leaves, than by all other forms of decorations. Actually, there are regulations in the Shastras of what kind of flower should be offered to Krishna at what time of the day, what time of the year. So many such things are there. And perhaps there may still be people expert who know the science of different flowers, to know what to offer when. We may or may not know this science, but we can take refuge in Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam. Then alright, whatever is available we offer with devotion. If you offer, Krishna will accept. It doesn't matter if you are not expert in all these sciences. But Krishna accepts the devotion with which we offer our things. Then Kunti Maharani says, Namaha Pankaja Netraya. Obeisances unto you, whose eyes are like lotus petals, or whose glance is as cooling as a lotus. Either way, we can understand this. So Krishna's eyes are very beautiful, and his glance is even more beautiful. Of course, that is a different subject. Some other time, it's a subject in itself, Krishna's glance. It is much talked about by Krishna's devotees. Jayadev Goswami talks about Krishna's eyes very nicely when he talks about Amala Kamala Dala Lochana He. He says, Amala, immaculate, spotless, Kamala Dala Lochana He. Lochana means eyes. So Krishna's eyes are just like that immaculate lotus petal. So if you take all the words for eyes, what are the different words for eyes in Sanskrit? Nayana, Netra, Aksha. So take all the words, Chakshu. So take all the words for lotus and take all the words for eyes and make combinations. You'll get various names of Krishna. So one time we had a competition for devotees as to who can write more names of Krishna. And one very clever devotee did all these combinations. got the first prize. Kamala Nayan, Kamala Lochan, Kamalaksha. And he went to all like that. He did all these combinations. So like that, if you see the poetic ways of expressing Krishna's beauty and his glories. So his glance is not only cooling as a lotus, but can also be very fiery. Vajradapi kathorane kusumadapi komalam. It is said that Krishna can be harder than a thunderbolt or softer than a rose, softer than a flower. So also his glance. It can be as cooling as a lotus, which can mitigate the distress of material existence, or it can be like blazing fire. Can you give any example of when the Lord's glance can be like blazing fire? Narsingadev, yes, of course. When Lord Ramachandra was on the seashore, wanting to cross over to Lanka, and at that time the ocean refused to part because he wanted to go. Lord Ram wanted to go. He fasted and waited for 3 days on the seashore, but the ocean refused, or he didn't acknowledge Ram's presence. And at that time Lord Ram became furious, and with red hot eyes he gazed at the water, and the water started bubbling and boiling and underwent tremendous turbulence. And then there were high, fierce waves and winds, and all the sea animals became so perturbed. Finally, the deity of the sea had to come with folded hands in front of Lord Ram. So, the glance of the Lord can also be extremely fiery if required. So, in this way, Kunti Maharani is describing the wonderful glance and the eyes of the Supreme Lord. Namaste Pankajangraye. Angri means feet. You can try the same thing, various synonyms, and then combine. So, Krishna has lotus feet, which are as beautiful as lotus. At the same time, it can also mean that the soles of his feet are marked with the symbol of the lotus. Krishna has 19 symbols. In Nectar of Devotion and other scriptures, you find all these descriptions. And there are symbols like the lotus, the thunderbolt, the gourd, and what else? Like that, so many. So many such symbols are there. And by these symbols one can identify who is an avatar. Actually, this is one of the ways, one of the tests of an avatar. That there should be distinguishing marks of Godhood upon the palms of his hands and the soles of his feet. So when Krishna was walking in the dust of Braja, the Brajavasis could find out where he was by looking at the impressions in the sand, and they could see all these marks of the elephant gourd and the thunderbolt and the lotus flower and barley, grains of barley, and so on. Vrindaranyam Svapadaramanam Pravishad. So when he entered the Vrindavan forest, then it became more glorious because of the imprints of his lotus feet on the soil of Vrindavan. Vrindavan is anyway glorious, but it becomes all the more glorious because of the touch, the footprints of Krishna's lotus feet. In this way, Krishna is glorifying, Kunti Devi is glorifying Krishna. One time when I was traveling in a rickshaw in Bombay, the rickshaw stopped at a traffic signal. And sometimes, you know, in Bombay you have these beggars who come to you at the signal. So one beggar came, and happened to be a eunuch. You know, there are many eunuchs who go for begging. You know eunuch, neither male, female, napumsak. So he or she, whatever you may call, she came. And when she saw me, she started begging because she said, what she can get from me, she realized. Then she suddenly started speaking Kunti's prayers. And she started with this one, Namaha Pankajanabhaya. And she went on reciting till the light turned green. I was wonderstruck. I was speechless with amazement. And she was so fluently reciting these, and she recited practically the whole thing. She started actually with Krishnaya Vasudevaya, and she went on and on and on and on, reciting the whole prayers. The rickshawala was telling her to go away, but I said, you wait, let her recite. It's amazing. And then unfortunately the light turned green and we went and I never saw that person again. So you never know, just see the rich culture of this land. God knows what kind of karma that person had performed, that he's got a eunuch's body and then become a beggar and then he's died in the streets of Bombay. And who cares whether that person knows Kunti's prayers, knows Srimad Bhagavatam. But here was an opportunity this person found. So someone will be interested to hear. She was speaking. It's a very interesting episode. And so anyway, I thought I would share this small incident with you. So next verse, let us take Kunti Maharani's next verse. यथा ऋषिकेश खलेन देवकी कंसेन रुद्धाति चिरं शुचार्पिता विमोचिताहं च सहात्मजा विभो त्वयैव नाथेन मुहुर्विपद्गणात् O Hrishikesh, master of the senses and lord of lords, you have released your mother Devaki, who was long imprisoned and distressed by the envious King Kansa, and me and my children from a series of constant dangers. She begins by addressing Krishna as Hrishikesh, master of the senses. We see Kunti is praying here with regard to Devaki and herself. And she says that you first of all showed your mercy upon Devaki by releasing her from the prison. She was put into prison by her envious brother Kansa. And you also showed your mercy upon me and my children by protecting us when we were in very difficult times. So now, Krishna showed his mercy both to Devaki and to Kunti. But of the two, both were saved by Krishna. But on whom did he bestow more mercy? On Devaki or on Kunti? Kunti? Why? Huh? Her association, yes. Devaki also got in Dwarka, association of Krishna. Devoted, yes, both were devotees. Mother and aunt, well, yes. Husband was not there, that is the answer. The acharyas explained that actually Krishna saved Kunti Maharani's sons, but he didn't save Devaki's sons. Devaki's six sons were killed. Whereas Kunti Maharani's five sons were saved by Krishna. Krishna had given a vow to Devaki in the Mahabharata, Kunti Maharani, I beg your pardon, that I promise you that your five sons will come back alive from the battle. And Kunti Maharani, she remembered this promise and she was extremely grateful at the end of the battle. And if you remember, we talked day before yesterday that she blessed Krishna. What was her blessing? That the sun may one day become cool, the moon may one day become hot, but your words will never fail. So she blessed Krishna, and Krishna accepted that blessing because it was coming from his senior. So in this way, we see that Krishna saved the sons of Kunti Maharani, and he didn't offer the same benefit to Devaki. Devaki's sons died. So why? It is explained because Devaki had a husband. Kunti Maharani did not. Kunti did not have any shelter apart from Krishna. Devaki at least had Vasudev. So Vasudev was there to pacify her, to protect her, to whatever extent was possible. But Kunti Maharani was all alone. In fact, when we see the Mahabharata, we see that except for Vidura, there was no one really speaking to whom she could confide. And Vidura was the only one who would give good advice and guidance to save the Pandavas in time. And all the others, Kunti Maharani could not trust. Even Bhishma she could not trust. Although Bhishma was so fond of the Pandavas, Drona was so fond of the Pandavas, but they could not be trusted. Because Bhishma was loyal to the throne out of his sense of honor and loyalty. So was Drona. So Vidura was the only one whom they could trust. And conversely, as far as Duryodhana is concerned, he could trust Bhishma and Drona and Kripacharya. In fact, Duryodhana said, when Dhritarashtra expressed his reservations about Duryodhana's evil schemes against the Pandavas, Duryodhana said, "Father, don't worry about Bhishma, because he's honorable man, and he's bound to the throne of Hastinapur by his vow. So he will never go against whoever is on the throne. He has eaten our salt." As far as Dronacharya is concerned, his son Ashwatthama is my best friend. He is very loyal to me. And Drona is very attached to his son. So he will not go against his son. So Drona is ours. Kripacharya, well, Drona has married Kripa's sister, Kripi. So Kripacharya will be on our side. So we can trust these three. But Vidur, we can't trust him. Because you never know what he will do. But anyway, what can he do to us? He is one man. We are so powerful. But for Kunti, all the others could not be trusted. Only Vidura could be trusted. But then Vidura was not very powerful. He was after all a Dasi Putra. He did not have the same power in the court, officially speaking, as Dhritarashtra had. Although informally, Dhritarashtra used to take a lot of good advice from Vidura. Vidura was said to be very wise. There is, in fact, just like there is Chanakya Niti, there is also Vidura Niti. So he was known for his wisdom. So Kunti Maharani was helpless. She went through so many difficulties, and we are going to see some of them in the next verse. And she had no one to protect her. Vidura, all he could do was to give good advice from a distance. But he could not do anything more. He was helpless also. So therefore Krishna showered his mercy more upon Kunti than Devaki. At the same time, we should know that Devaki also was such an advanced devotee. She is number what on the list? Devaki is number 5 on the list. Right? Because she was a pure devotee of the Lord. Otherwise, how could the Lord have accepted her as his mother? But yet, because of the particular situation, the Lord allowed her sons to be persecuted. Why did Krishna allow the sons of Devaki to be killed? There is a whole history for that. But essentially, it is the nature of this material world that one may be persecuted by one's near and dear ones, or one may be persecuted by anyone. Sometimes when devotees come to Krishna consciousness, if they are being harassed by someone, if they are undergoing difficulties in life, they sometimes get very disturbed. Their faith gets shaken. And they say, "Well, why is it happening to me after I have become a devotee?" The answer is that we are all following in parampara. The parampara of great devotees always shows that they all had to undergo many miseries. And Devaki and Vasudeva had to go so much trouble. Kunti Maharani, Pandavas had to go so much trouble. Prahlad Maharaj had to undergo so many miseries. All the great devotees in the past, suffering and miseries. So it is in keeping with the parampara, the tradition. If you want to be a devotee, then Krishna will put his devotees into suffering. Why? Because in times of danger, the devotees actually take shelter of Krishna. These are impetuses for a devotee to take more shelter of Krishna. And one becomes helpless. when one realizes that everyone else is a fallible soldier, nobody can help me, only Krishna can help me. Like Draupadi, at the time of her Vastraharan, disrobing in the assembly. So when a devotee is put in a helpless position, then Krishna comes and Krishna saves. One devotee was sharing his experience with the Bombay trains. Those of you who have been unfortunate enough to travel in the Bombay trains will know the extreme crowds there. At once, it's difficult, practically impossible to get in. But even if you somehow succeed, it is almost impossible to get out. So there was one devotee who was traveling, somehow got trapped inside. And he had an urgent appointment and he had to get out of the train when his station came. But it was extremely difficult to push because people don't cooperate. In Bombay, it's like that. It's an animalistic civilization. So they refused to move and he was pushing and shoving and all making all efforts to come out. Finally, just as the train was about to leave from the station, he managed to put one foot down and the second foot down, but his bag was inside. And it was caught there, so he was half in, half out. And no one was moving. Even though he was pleading to everyone, move, move, let me get down. So then in desperation he yelled, Krishna, loudly. Suddenly everything cleared. And he peacefully walked down. So, they must have been more startled by the shout than by the name. But anyway, Krishna is in everybody's heart, so he prompted everybody to move to the side. So Krishna puts us in helpless situations so we can take shelter of his name. Incidentally, that is one reason why chanting the name of Krishna loudly is recommended in Kali Yuga. Because it is an indication of a helpless situation. If we are going to chant in a very casual way, it means that we are not helpless, we don't really need Krishna. That means we don't recognize that we are in a dangerous situation. If we are in a dangerous situation and if we recognize that, then we will really cry to Krishna from the bottom of our heart. One time one devotee was giving the analogy that suppose you are walking down a dark street in the middle of the night. You are all alone. Nobody is there. And suddenly, somebody comes out from the shadows with a knife and is about to attack you. So you will say, shout for help. How will you say? Will you say, help? Will you say like that? You will shout at the top of your voice, help. Then there is some possibility that something will come. So similarly, when we recognize that this material world is a dangerous place, death is hanging like a Damocles sword over our head. Any time death can come. Full miseries are just waiting at the corner. If we really realize this, then we will call out in desperation Krishna's name. So Krishna puts his devotees into such suffering deliberately so that their sense of dependence on him will increase. So they will realize by his mercy that this material world is not a nice place to be in. Under the spell of Maya, the living entity imagines this world to be a nice place. But when Krishna's mercy dawns upon him, through a series of repeated sufferings and miseries, he comes to the realization that this world is a miserable place. So let me take shelter of Krishna. So therefore Devaki also was put through all these traumas, all these difficulties. And Kunti Maharani too. So what were the kind of sufferings that Kunti Maharani and her sons went through? That she will describe in the next verse.
Vishan Mahagne Purushat Darshanat Asat Sabhaya Vanavasa Krishratah. Mridhe mridhe neka maharathastrato द्रोणस्त्रतश्चास्म हरेभिरक्षिताः।
My dear Krishna, your lordship has protected us from a poison cake, from a great fire, from cannibals, from the vicious assembly, from sufferings during our exile in the forest, and from the battle where great generals fought. And now you have saved us from the weapon of Ashwatthama. She is describing the various times when they were in great crisis and when only by the mercy of Krishna they were saved. So this is basically all Mahabharata. We don't have much time, but do you want to hear some brief stories, Mahabharata stories relating to these episodes? Yes. Stories everybody likes, right? Nice to hear. Philosophies can be a little dry and boring. So Kunti Maharani is remembering the time Vishan means poison. So when Bhima was fed poisonous cake by Duryodhan, as you know, after Pandu died, the sages brought back the Pandavas and Kunti Devi to Hastinapur. And they were welcomed back. Till that time, Duryodhan was the apple of the eye of everyone because he was the potential future world emperor. So everybody was taking care to teach him nice things. He was given a lot of importance because a lot of ill omens had come at the time of Duryodhan's birth. Donkeys were braying and many things like that. Inauspicious omens. So everybody knew that Duryodhan's future was not good. But so all the more they were careful to teach him moral codes and everything. But it was like pouring water on a duck's back. No effect. So when the Pandavas came back to Hastinapur, everyone saw the difference, like between a crow and a swan, the difference between the Kauravas and the Pandavas. The Kauravas were very proud, self-centered, arrogant, and the Pandavas very humble, very cultured. They offered respect to their elders, and they also had more prowess, more talent. So very soon they became the favorites of not only the residents of the palace, but also the citizens of Hastinapur. And this was simply intolerable to Duryodhan. And he was burning with envy. And among all, he used to envy Bhima the most. Because Bhima was the same age as him, but he was very, very powerful. When the young princes, the 100 Kauravas and the 5 Pandavas would go to sport, then they would playfully wrestle, they would play in the water, and Bhima would do things playfully, but his play was very serious for the others. Because when he held somebody in his grasp, it was practically death for the others. And he would toss about the Kaurava princes as if they were some little pieces of stone. He would catch them and throw them far away into the river. And sometimes he would dunk them in the water till they practically drowned. Sometimes, out of irritation, 10-20 of the Kaurava princes would attack him, and all 10-20 he would make mincemeat out of them. So in this way, you know, Bhima was so powerful that all the Kauravas were burning with irritation and envy. And Duryodhan one day, with the help of Shakuni, Dushasan, he hatched a plot that I will feed Bhima poison cake, and then I'll dispatch him off so that I will be free. Then with Bhima dead, the power of the Pandavas will be gone, and then the path to the throne for me will be clear. So he invited one time all the princes for a nice feast. He took them to a nice specially made palace where all kinds of arrangements for their pleasure were there. And they sat down for the feast, and Duryodhan made sure he was next to Bhima. And he had already personally mixed large quantities of poison, enough to kill 100 men. And he feigned great affection to Bhima. Very lovingly he started, you know, feeding Bhima. Bhima were very simple by nature, although very wrathful and very passionate, but very simple. He didn't see through the so-called love of Duryodhan. And he was interested in the food after all. So when the food came in front of him, he started eating with gusto, with relish, and he finished his usual quota of food, and then all the princes went to play. And as usual, Bhima was wrestling and playing, throwing people in the water, dunking them in the water. And in this way, the whole day passed, and Duryodhan was watching carefully to see what effect the poison would have on Bhima. Nothing was happening. Until evening, Bhima was going full speed, strong. And then finally, in the evening, everyone was weary, and they all departed to their rooms to take rest. That was the time when the poison started taking effect on Bhima. He became very tired, and he lay down on the banks of the river, of the Ganga, to take rest, and he fell fast asleep. Duryodhan had been watching, waiting for this opportunity. So he came with Dushasan, took very strong ropes, tied him very nicely, and pushed him into the water. Bhima fell deep down into the water, and he was carried by the undercurrents. And somehow by Krishna's arrangement, he went onto the mystical path underneath the Ganges river, and he went straight to Nagaloka. You know, there are mystical paths in the universe. It is not that you have to go to other planets the way Columbia spaceship is going, or some other Sputnik or Apollo. When the demigods come here, or when the rishis from the higher planets come here, they come by the space ways, which are mystical ways. Through the subtle ether, they come here. Not direct gross way as we think. Just like Ganga. Ganga is called Tripathagami. She goes through all the three worlds. In the heavenly world, she is called Mandakini. Here, she is called Ganga or Bhagirathi, Bhagirathi. And in the Patal Loka, she is called Bhogavati. So she comes from the heavenly planets. She falls on the earth. But we never see Ganga falling. Do we see Ganga anytime? In the sky, look up and see Ganga coming? Why not? Because she comes through the subtle ways. Similarly, from the earth, through the subtle mystical pathway, she goes to Patala Loka. So there are many mystical pathways like this, and Bhima, by Krishna's arrangement, happened to come onto one of them, and he was swept into Nagaloka. And he suddenly found himself in the midst of the Nagas. The Nagas were very surprised. All of a sudden, who is this big, strong Kshatriya who has come? And as a reaction, they immediately started biting him. And the poison from their fangs, by Krishna's arrangement, was a perfect antidote to the poison fed by Duryodhan. So Bhima came to consciousness and he saw, what is this? I'm surrounded by snakes and bound by ropes. He understood the situation and he exerted his muscles, snapped the cords that bound him and caught the snakes and beat them to death. And all the remaining snakes fled away in fear, went running to Vasuki, the king of the Nagas, complaining. We were just peacefully sitting and suddenly this person comes out of nowhere. He has come here and he has killed so many snakes. So Vasuki was thinking, who could have come? So at that time there was another personality, Naga chief called Arka, who was sitting there. So Vasuki assumed a human form and along with Arka, he went to see, who is this person? Now Arka had actually many ages ago lived in human society. And he happened to be the great-grandfather of Kunti. And he immediately recognized Bhima. And he said, oh, this is my relative, my descendant. So, Vasuki said, so what should we do? How should we receive him? What kind of gifts we should give him? So, Arka replied, we should give him some of our rasa, our ambrosia, our nectar, which is made from distilled celestial herbs. And by drinking this rusk, one becomes so powerful, one gets the strength of 10,000 elephants. And one cannot be attacked by disease and such like. One becomes practically immortal. So they said, fine. So Bhima was brought one pitcher of this amrit of the Nagas. The Nagas generally used to take it slowly because it was very powerful. But Bhima quaffed it down with one gulp. The whole pitcher. And then not only that, eight pitchers, eight big kumbhas of his amrit, one after the other, one gulp, he took. And all the Nagas watched in amazement. They had never seen anyone like this. Even they themselves could not do it. And then Bhima was satisfied, yes. And then he fell drowsy and he fell asleep. For 8 days he rested there while his body assimilated that rasa. And when he woke up, he felt he had the strength of 10,000 tigers and elephants. And then he bid farewell to Vasuki. Vasuki treated him nicely and then explained the circumstances by which he had fallen here. And because Vasuki also was gifted with some higher vision by which he could understand what had happened. And then he transported Bhima back through the waters with fresh white robes, and Bhima came on to the surface. In these 8 days, Duryodhan and Dushasan internally were rejoicing like anything. But externally, they appeared very concerned, very sorrowful. The Pandavas and Kunti were extremely worried. They couldn't sleep at night. Kunti Maharani was thinking, what happened? Where is Bhima? She sent Yudhishthira again to look for him. Yudhishthira said, I don't know. He's nowhere there. Then Kunti asked Vidur, "See, I fear that Duryodhan must have killed Bhima. Every time I see Duryodhan, I have often seen an evil glint in his eye. So he must have done something." Vidur said, "My dear lady, do not worry. Vyasadeva has made the prediction that your sons will have long lives. So do not fear for Bhima's life. He will come back." So Kunti was somewhat pacified but still nervous. Eventually on the 9th day, Bhima came running with a kind of vigor that they had never seen. Even earlier Bhima was vigorous, but now he came back with the strength of 10,000 elephants. And then he described the whole situation, what had happened. And Yudhishthir Maharaj was shocked, because he was basically such a nice person. He never had any ill feelings towards the Kauravas. He was shocked that Duryodhan could think like this about the Pandavas. Bhima wanted to kill them straight away. Yudhishthir said, "No, see, we are not in power. We are weak. We don't have father. And Bhishma, Drona, they will take the side of the king. So we are not in a position. If we declare this openly, there will be open enmity between the Kauravas and us." Yudhishthir was very wise. So he said, "Better keep quiet. Don't tell anyone." So they decided to keep quiet. Kunti informed Vidura. And Vidura also said, "Yes, Yudhishthir is very wise. It's the right decision." But from that day on, Kunti and the Pandavas became very careful to see every step. They would notice what's happening, because they were aware that the Kauravas would do something. So this was Vishan, about how Bhima was saved from the poisoned cake. In fact, Duryodhan tried it one more time. And Yuyutsu, the half-brother of the Kauravas, he informed them. You see, Dhritarashtra had 100 sons from Gandhari, but he also had one son from a maidservant, and he was called Yuyutsu. If you remember the Mahabharata story, just before the commencement of the battle, Yudhishthir went up to address the Kaurava army, and he said, "Anyone amongst you who wants to switch sides and come to my side, you are welcome. There is still time." Only Yuyutsu came forward. And in the midst of the armies, both the armies assembled, Yuyutsu he got down from his chariot and walked to the other side, in the full sight of the whole assembled armies. And Duryodhan was furious. All the others in the Kaurava army were furious. But Yuyutsu did not care. He came on the side of the Pandavas. He also was killed eventually. So he was always favorable towards the Pandavas. He had a soft corner for the Pandavas. So he informed Vidura that this is the plot Duryodhan is hatching. He wants to feed Bhima again Dhatura poison. And when Bhima was informed, he laughed it off. He said, "Now nothing can harm me." And Duryodhan fed Bhima this poison again. Duryodhan didn't know that Bhima knows that he had fed him poison. So this time again he fed him poison, and Bhima heartily ate the meal. Nothing happened, and Duryodhan was waiting and staring at him with open hatred. So in this way, Duryodhana's attempts were unsuccessful. But Duryodhana kept on trying. Mahagneha. Mahagneha means the great fire. Of what? When were they saved from the great fire? In the Lakshagra at Varunavata, right? I think all of you know these stories from childhood. You have been hearing Mahabharata, reading Amar Chitra Katha and all that. You must have known all these stories. So you know the story of Varunavata. Time doesn't permit us to really talk of these stories at length. But because their story is connected to the Supreme Lord's devotees, so it is very purifying to hear. So you know how he was saved, how such a nice, in a nice way Vidura informed the Pandavas. The Pandavas, through Vidura's help, dug a tunnel, went out, and the Lakshagraha was burnt, and some Nishad woman who had come there with 5 sons, she perished along with her sons, and Purochan, the minister of Duryodhana, also perished. And the Pandavas and Kunti Devi went out through the tunnel into the forest, and they were saved. The citizens thought that they had died. There was great sorrow all over the kingdom. But the Pandavas were in hiding in the forest, and as they were traversing the forest, they became very tired. But Bhima put Kunti on his shoulder, he put Nakul and Sahadeva on his side, and Arjun and Yudhishthira on his arms, and he ran through the forest, crushing them, plowing down the trees, because it was such a dense forest. So that was Bhima's extraordinary might. After all, he was the son of Vayudev. And at that time, then the third problem here, Purushada Darshanat, the cannibals, Hidimba, Rakshasa means one who eats human flesh. So they were so tired that they decided to sit down there and take rest. And Kunti Maharani asked Bhima for some water. And as he went to get some water from the nearby water source, Kunti and the other Pandavas were so tired they just fell asleep. And Bhima came back and he saw they were asleep and he felt great pity. He was not tired, but he saw the condition of his brothers and mother and he felt great sorrow in his heart. And he felt that if the Kauravas were in front of me now, I would have killed them with my own hands personally. But the Kauravas have been saved because of the goodness of my eldest brother, Yudhishthira. So at that time, Hidimba, who was a great Rakshasa, very, very powerful, he was staying nearby. And his sister was Hidimbi. So he called Hidimbi and said, I smell food. I smell very nice human flesh. So I'm eager. We have not had a feast for a long time. So go and bring those humans here. Kill them and bring them here so I can drink their warm blood and I can have my feast. So Hidimbi went in great anticipation. And there she found Bhima standing. And she was immediately attracted towards Bhima because he was looking there like a lion standing there, very handsome and dashing. So she assumed immediately the form of a very beautiful lady. And she approached Bhima and proposed that she should become his wife. And Bhima said, Well, you are a Rakshasi, you have revealed yourself, but because of fear of a Rakshasa, I cannot do anything now. I am supposed to look after my family members. Just out of lust, I cannot forego them to come with you and go into the forest. So she said, all right, I will take everyone. I'll carry you all by my mystic powers and we will go far away from Hidimba. So he was saying, no, out of fear of Rakshasa, I'm not going to disturb the sleep of my family members. They're very tired. So this discussion was going on. Meanwhile, Hidimba was getting impatient. He personally came. And then he saw that his sister had transformed herself into a beautiful lady and she's talking with Bhima. He immediately understood the situation. And then he attacked Bhima. And then Bhima and he had a nice wrestling match. They pounded each other. And hearing this noise, Arjuna woke up and he smiled and he went up to Bhima and said, do you want my help, Bhima? He was only taunting Bhima to finish the matter quickly. And Arjuna's job did it. He did the job. Bhima became furious. He said, no, I will do in a minute. And then he threw him 100 times in the air and smashed him to the ground and killed him. So in this way, Hidimba was killed, and Hidimbi, in her human form, she approached Kunti, that please, you are also a lady, so you understand that you should not refuse my desires. I wish to take on your son as my husband. So Yudhishthir Maharaj was also there, so he said, alright, but on one condition, that you may sport with my brother all through the day, but at night he must come back with us. So they agreed. Bhima put one more condition, that when our son is born, I will leave you, because I have more important work to do. We have to regain our kingdom. So she also agreed. Then she took them by her mystic powers to some very nice sylvan surroundings in the forest, and they lived there for many months, and then Ghatotkacha was born. He served the Pandavas very nicely, and then Ghatotkacha also left. Ghatotkacha was also summoned by Bhima in the battle of Kurukshetra, and he also died actually. He was also killed there. So in this way, they were saved from the cannibals, the Rakshasas in the forest. Asat Sabhaya, the assembly of the Kauravas, where Draupadi was disrobed, how Krishna saved her by incarnating as her cloth. Kunti Maharani is remembering all these episodes. Vanavasa Kritsataha, all the sufferings they underwent in the forest, it is only by Krishna's mercy that they were able to overcome that. Mridhe mridhe anek maharatastrato. There were many, many great warriors in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, maharathis like Karna, Drona, Bhishma, Kripa. And Arjuna, actually speaking, was no match for them. As we read in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, when Parikshit Maharaj says that all these great generals were like timingala fish, which are huge fish, and my grandfathers were like small fish, they could easily have been swallowed. But by the mercy of Krishna, you know, my forefathers, they emerged victorious. It is simply because of Krishna. By Krishna's mercy, Arjuna was able to emerge victorious in the end. There is a story that we all hear often. I do not know the Shastric origin. I don't know if it is not there in Mahabharata, but it is said like that, so I cannot give you Shastra Praman for that. But there is a saying that when at the end of the battle, Krishna and Arjuna wanted to get down, and Arjuna said, Krishna, Krishna, you please get down. Krishna said, no, no, Arjuna, you get down first. So Arjuna got down, and then Krishna got down, and when Krishna descended from the chariot crumbled to pieces. So Krishna told Arjuna, actually this should have happened long ago, but because I was there, so everything remained. In other words, if it wasn't for Krishna, Arjuna would have been defeated, perhaps killed long ago. So Kunti Maharani is remembering that only by the mercy of Krishna that Arjuna and the other Pandavas were saved. So she has great gratitude in her heart. And just now, recently, before she offered her prayers, Krishna had saved Uttara and her womb from the Brahmastra of Ashwatthama by entering into the womb of Uttara. So in this way, Kunti Maharani is very, very grateful to Krishna. She is offering her gratitude and love. And she concludes in this way. She talks about all the sufferings. And how does she view the sufferings that all of them underwent? That is there in the next shloka. But we will have to see that on a subsequent visit. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thank you very much. Do we have to leave at 11 or quarter to 11? Leave at 11 from here? Oh, yes. I thought you have to reach at 11. So if you have any questions in relation to today's class, we can have for 5-10 minutes. Yes. I beg your pardon? Eldest. Dhritarashtra is the eldest.
And he was not given the throne because he was not having the eye. So the Pandavas his body. The kingdom is supposed to go to Rudrastra's country. Why the Pandavas were
down? The question is that Dhritarashtra was the eldest, but because he was blind, he was not given the throne, and Pandu ascended to the throne. But after Pandu's death, Dhritarashtra again became king, so Duryodhan should rightfully have become the king. Isn't that is the question? Actually, Dhritarashtra was the eldest, and properly speaking, he should have become the king, but he was disqualified from that position because of his being blind. Therefore, the number two, Pandu, he became the king. Now, once Pandu becomes the king, then the next king has to be his descendant, not anybody else. So therefore, the next person after Pandu's death should have been Yudhishthir. But because Yudhishthir Maharaj was a small boy at the time of Pandu's death, therefore he was not able to. So Dhritarashtra was really a caretaker king. He wasn't really the king. He was looking after the kingdom in the absence of Yudhishthir Maharaj. Just like Bhishma was doing before Pandu and Dhritarashtra grew up. He was like a caretaker king. So Dhritarashtra should have looked after the kingdom in that way. But he became attached to his post, to his throne. And then Duryodhan became attached to that position of crown prince. He wanted the kingdom, and therefore the complication started. Any other question? No. No, the question is that is there a story that after Pandu's death, Pandu's body was cut up and all the Pandavas ate the body and Sahadev something? No. His body was burnt on the flames and Madri entered the flames along with Pandu's body. In fact, there was some discussion between Madri and Kunti as to who should enter the flames. Kunti wanted to first. Actually, it was her right as the elder queen. But Madri said that you are more capable of looking after the children better, who are still young. So please let me ascend into the fire and you look after, you stay back. So Kunti accepted the proposal. So Madri and Pandu, both of them, their bodies perished in the fire. Well, Sahadev was blessed with great wisdom. Even later we see in the Srimad Bhagavatam, he was always known for his wisdom. But this was not the way he acquired the wisdom. Any other question or comment? Yes. Why did Madri ascend the throne, ascend the Sati fire? Why did she? Yeah, Sati was always, the question is that Madri ascended into the fire along with her dead husband, but Kausalya and Sumitra and others did not. Sati was always voluntary. It was not forced. It was voluntary. Madri could not bear the separation from her husband. So also with Kunti. But Kunti, the only reason she tolerated that separation, she was able to survive, was for the sake of her 5 children. 3 plus 2. So that is why she stayed back. And Madri, because of separation, which was unbearable, she entered into the fire. Of course, Kausalya Devi and Sumitra Devi, they were also very distraught at the death of their husband. But somehow, because Lord Ram had left, there was some little disappointment with their husband, that because of their husband, Ram had to go to the forest. So she was waiting for the time when Ram would come back. That was the hope in her life. She was anticipating that particular moment. Those 14 years will get over and my son will come back from the forest and I will see him as the king. So that hope kept her going. Any other questions or comments? Yes, Mother. The question is that Krishna knew that Karna was a son of Kunti. Why did he not reveal it earlier? Because that was part of Krishna's plan. Karna was to be a very powerful source of difficulty for the Pandavas and strength for the Kauravas. If he had revealed this, Yudhishthira Maharaj would not have ascended the throne, because the right would have gone to Karna, being the eldest. In fact, Kunti Maharani did make this proposal to Karna, as we talked yesterday, that you please come back, come to our side, you will become the king, Yudhishthira will become your servant, your younger brother, you are the eldest, the throne is rightfully yours. But he didn't accept. So Krishna wanted Yudhishthira to be the king. Yudhishthira was his great devotee. So therefore, he did not reveal. In a drama, as the drama unfolds, there are so many items of suspense that are held up, some secrets not revealed, for ultimate fulfillment of some purpose. So in Krishna's plans, the secrecy of Karna's origin had to be maintained. And till the end, it was not revealed. Kunti Maharani did not tell her sons, Pandavas, this secret till everything was over, till the battle was over. And then the Pandavas experienced tremendous grief and remorse, especially Yudhishthira. And he was thinking of all the bad, harsh treatment that was meted out to Karna, and he felt very sorry about it. So because Krishna had his own plans, he did not reveal to Kunti or to anyone else. There's another question here. If there's a question pertaining to today's now discussion, it's better. Otherwise, other general questions we will take in the evening. Yes, Mataji. I beg your pardon? Yeah, the question is that in all the incidents that are mentioned here, in only some of these incidents, Krishna was personally, physically present. In the first three, Krishna was not present. But he was, maybe not in the form that Kunti was seeing in front of her, but Krishna's mercy was there, and Kunti Maharani knew that it was only by Krishna's mercy that they were saved. So in that sense, she is saying that it's only because of you that my children and me were saved from all these repeated dangers. Any other questions? Yes. 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 The question is that why Krishna has to wait till we call out helplessly? What is the fate of those who don't surrender fully? You see, Krishna is a very busy person. He has so many pastimes in the spiritual world to do. He has to tend the calves. He has to do Rasleela with the gopis. He has to give pleasure to Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda. And any and everybody who casually calls Hare Krishna, why should he come? Leaving behind everything, isn't it? Just like the example of the mother. If a child casually cries, the mother will not come. But if the child cries piteously, shrill cry, desperate cry, she will leave everything and run to the child. Because it is a helpless cry. She understands, now he really means it. Something's really wrong, I should go now. Emergency, I should go. So also with Krishna. So Krishna comes when we cry desperately to him. Yesterday, our Vaishnava Prabhu was narrating a nice story an example. He was giving the example story of a small child who fell off the cot as he was sleeping. And he started crying loudly for his mother. The mother came running, and to pacify him, she gave him a sweet, sandesh sweet. And the child became very happy. Then the child started thinking, if by falling from the bed and crying I get a sweet, let me do this tomorrow also. So again he pretended to fall down, pretended to cry. Mother didn't come. Cried more, mother's not coming. Finally he told the mother, why you didn't come? Said, yesterday when I fell down from the cot, you came and you gave me nice sandesh. But today you're not giving me sandesh. So the mother replied, yesterday you were crying for me, so I came. Today you were crying for sandesh, so I didn't come. Nice story. So when we cry helplessly, it means that we are crying for Krishna. Otherwise Krishna will not waste his time coming. When someone is casual, he is not really seeking Krishna's shelter. He is casually chatting, Hare Krishna, and just going on. Krishna will not take us seriously. Ye yatha mam prapadyante tam sathaiva bhajamyaham. As we surrender to Krishna, He reciprocates accordingly. If we take Krishna very seriously, He will take us very seriously. If we take Krishna casually, He will take us very casually. So the question is, what is the fate of a person who is not so serious in his surrender to Krishna? What happens to such a person? Again the same formula, ye yatha mam prapadyante. According to the degree of his surrender, he or she will make advancement. According to the lack of surrender, it will take that much more time for us to go back to Godhead. We will have to stay longer here in our tenure in the material existence. We will have to take birth again and again till we become fully surrendered. And only when we are fully surrendered, then Krishna will say yes. Now this devotee is qualified to come back home. So better we don't wait for a future life. We should try to become pure devotees in this life. There is no time to waste. This human life is a very precious gift. And we have to become very serious in our Krishna consciousness, in our spiritual practices, in our japa, in our association with devotees, in our hearing and chanting, our reading of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, in our seva, in our relationships with the devotees. We have to become very serious. Otherwise Krishna will not take us seriously. So you have such a nice facility here. Jagannath has provided you this simple but beautiful temple where you can all have an opportunity to come here and gather. It is only through the association of devotees in satsanga that Krishna can be obtained. Amongst each other, we can encourage each other and develop greater and greater levels of surrender and seriousness in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, if all the devotees of Sri Jagannath Mandir make it a point to come here to the temple and assemble regularly to hear and chant together on a regular basis, as much as possible, keeping the temple the center of activities, then that will enable us to move on the path of surrender very fast. So this will be a great asset. The temple is the place where all the devotees can be unified together. Temple, of course, cannot be the center every day of our life, because devotees are staying in different parts of the city and there are so many other groups of devotees. But ultimately all these groups will be united at least once a week, twice a week in the temple. Everyone will come together, hear and chant, and then go back to their respective duties and family and job and business. So by this process of constant and regular association together, we can become more serious, more surrendered. Then we will move back. Then Krishna will take us seriously. If we are more serious to associate with devotees and hear and chant about Krishna, then Krishna will take us more seriously. Am I right? Is the question answered? Yes. The question is that Draupadi, even when she was holding to her cloth by one hand, Krishna didn't come. He wanted her to give up that hand also and surrender totally. So the question is that can we reach that standard of surrender? Yes, why not? Why should we not be able to reach it? Ultimately, we can reach it not just by dint of our strength, but by Krishna's mercy, the Vaishnava's mercy. Mercy is very powerful. If we become sincere in our Krishna consciousness, the mercy will flow. And then just like Draupadi surrendered, we will also be able to surrender. So we should have faith in the mercy of Krishna and the Vaishnavas, that by this process, we can move rapidly ahead and follow in the footsteps of Draupadi Devi. It is possible, and we must strive with that goal in mind. Even in this life, it is possible. That should be our aspiration, that we want to go back to Godhead in this life. Right? So, yes, listen. Okay. Fine. We can just have half an hour of this discussion and then question and answer.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for your kind attention.